headlines this hour. British media say calls for an end to the monarchy are growing stronger after the death of Queen Elizabeth. Kiev says it's pushing back Russia's military from strategic holdouts in the east, while Moscow says it is hitting Ukrainian army positions in the Kharkiv region. And millions of Muslim pilgrims are heading toward the Iraqi city of Karbala, ahead of Arba'in, a religious ritual to commemorate the third Shia Imam. Thanks for joining us. Calls are growing louder for an end to the British monarchy, with many starting to debate the relevance of the royal family since the death of Queen Elizabeth on Thursday. The main anti-monarchy group Republic says it is getting an influx of supporters on social media and elsewhere. But the group says that many people are refraining from openly expressing their opinions because they do not want to cause offense amid the emotional atmosphere and media focus on the story. The Republic is instead inviting people to be vocal and not feel intimidated. It says that they have every right to speak their minds about monarchy as a public office. Following Queen Elizabeth's death, her eldest son Charles has been named the king. His accession to the throne was proclaimed at a ceremony on Saturday. A correspondent in London, Saeed Pourreza, says anti-royal sentiment and republicanism have been gaining momentum in the UK over time.
These calls have been around for a long time. For one, you have a prime minister now in this country who, at one point in her career as a Republican, called for the monarchy to be abolished. And this goes back to the 1990s. She may have since changed her mind, but that's what she said back then. So did many other people. You're looking at a time when one in four Britons are now considering the monarchy as an anachronistic institution that has to be gone. Now that the queen, that was the figurehead of this institution for some 70 years, is gone, has passed away and will be laid to rest on September 11th. If you look at the different age groups have different feelings and ideas of the monarchy. There are statistics out there, for example, saying that if you look at the younger generation, people between the ages of 18 and 24, they say they don't see the point of the monarchy, that it doesn't belong to the 21st century and it has to be done away with. But then over 65s seem to want the monarchy to stay around. So opinions are split, not just in the UK, but in other countries as well, in the so-called realms where the queen was now the king, Charles III, the head of state.
As the war with Russia enters its 200th day, Ukraine is claiming rapid advances in its offensive to retake territory in the east. The head of the Ukrainian military says large parts of land spanning up to 3,000 square kilometers have been recaptured since the beginning of the counteroffensive this month. That's around a third larger than the total area announced by President Volodymyr Zelensky a day earlier. Kiev says this winter could become a turning point in the war if the West delivers more powerful weapons to Ukraine. Russia has confirmed the drawdown from eastern Kharkiv. But it says troops in Balaklia and Izium regions are regrouping along the Donetsk front. Moscow is also saying that its forces are hitting Ukrainian army positions in the Kharkiv region with precision air, missile and artillery strikes. Staying with Ukraine operations at the Russian-controlled Zaporizhzhia nuclear power plant comes to a complete halt. The state agency in charge of the facility says that it has disconnected one of the power units at the site for safety purposes, leading to a halt in operations of the power station. According to the agency, preparations are underway to cool down the plant. A few days ago, Kiev asked local residents to evacuate Russian-held areas around the facility for their own safety. Russia and Ukraine accuse each other of risking a nuclear disaster by shelling the power station. The UN has called for the surrounding areas to be demilitarized. A new report on poverty in France has revealed the devastating economic effects caused by Europe's sanctions on Russia over the Ukraine war. Multiple indicators have reached record lows, showing that the lower classes are worse off in decades. Rami Mazzeri has more from Paris.
The annual report from one of France's top NGOs revealed that poverty has already skyrocketed this year. And that's at what many say is only the beginning of years of inflation and recession provoked by sanctions on Russia over the unrest in Ukraine. Secours Populaire found that the number of people who say they have known poverty has increased 9% in just the past year. That's the biggest increase in 30 years. This year, over 40% of France says they can't pay their transport, medical, energy, or childcare bills, or go on vacation, or even buy fruits and vegetables. It's the highest percentage they've ever recorded.
The poverty question in France is one that's been central, but the social safety net is running out. It's just going to get worse and worse for the poor people because they're not going to be able to afford this stuff, you know? And the French are not going to be able to subsidize these cost of living increases the way they did.
The steep increase in poverty comes after a decade of failed austerity policies and a deep devaluing of the euro currency. The government just announced they expect the next two economic quarters to produce a growth rate of 0.2% and then 0%. Many predict that the essentially recession-level economy will soon begin massive layoffs. That combination spells stagflation, and it's something for which liberal economics has no theoretical remedy. This adds to the feeling of unease, especially among the investor class and high finance.
France has a pretty good record of having a social safety net for those who are on bottom as far as health care is concerned and other basic necessities. But since Macron got elected, a lot of those things have changed because Macron has decided that he's going to attack that social safety net.
The report showed that a near universal 85% of France is worried for the future generations. That's also the highest percentage ever recorded. Ramin Mazahiri, Paris.
In Sweden, people are heading to the polls for general elections. The polls pit the ruling Social Democrats against an unprecedented alliance between the right and the anti-immigration far right. The voters are electing lawmakers to the legislature as well as to local offices across the nation. Opinion polls show a tight race with Prime Minister Magdalena Andersson having the edge. Her Social Democratic Party has been in power since the year 2014, but its popularity has been dwindling. Campaigning in the current elections has seen parties battle to be the toughest on gang crime. Sweden now tops European statistics for firearm deaths. Soaring inflation and the energy crisis in the wake of the war in Ukraine have also taken center stage. Polls will close at 8 p.m. with the final results due around midnight. Millions of pilgrims from across the world are converging on the Iraqi holy city of Karbala for the annual commemoration of Arba'in. Pilgrims, many of them from Iran, are making the journey toward Karbala on foot. The city houses the shrine of Imam Hussein, the grandson of the Prophet Muhammad. This year, the pilgrimage, which is one of the largest religious congregations in the world, reaches its peak on the 17th of September. Arba'in marks 40 days after the martyrdom anniversary of Imam Hussein. On that day, the Imam and dozens of his companions were martyred during the Battle of Karbala nearly 14 centuries ago. Sunday marks the 21st anniversary of the September 11 attacks in the U.S. Following the attacks, the U.S. invaded Afghanistan under the pretext that the Taliban had supported al-Qaeda. But after 20 years, the Taliban are now back in power, and the country is reeling from multiple crises. Rahmatullah Bhagwan reports from Kabul.
On September 11, 2001, 19 terrorists hijacked four passenger jetliners and crashed them into major U.S. buildings. The attacks, killing nearly 3,000 people, were claimed by the al-Qaeda terrorist group.
On my orders, the United States military has begun strikes.
The United States responded to the attacks by invading Afghanistan, despite the fact that no Afghan was involved in the attacks. In fact, the U.S. invasion of Afghanistan in response to 9/11 attacks was totally wrong and against international law. Afghans were not involved in those attacks, and then al-Qaeda leader wasn't in Afghanistan. The U.S. occupied our country to achieve its geopolitical goals. It imposed a two-decade war on our country, but was finally defeated because our people stood against the oppressors and invaders.
The U.S. war in Afghanistan killed tens of thousands of people and displaced millions in the war-ravaged country. The American people lost trillions of dollars in their tax money, as well as thousands of army soldiers. Some experts say the only winner of the U.S. war were American defense contractors, who earned billions of dollars in revenue. According to those experts, the 9/11 attacks were a plot cooked and spied by Americans themselves to advance the Zionism agenda.
9/11 was a conspiracy rather than a real attack. By playing out this scenario, the Americans aimed to polarize the world again. The U.S. planned to fabricate a front fighting the Western world so that it can mobilize Western countries against that front and at the same time sell its weapons. One of the consequences of this incident was that the world after 9/11 became more ideological and that pitted the Islamic world against the West. What has been happening in the Middle East and Afghanistan for years are the consequences of September 11. The same conspiracy is currently running by provoking enmity against the U.S. and the West in Muslim countries in order to justify the invasion of countries in a region similar to Afghanistan.
The Taliban, which were ousted by the U.S.-led foreign troops in late 2001, came back to power in Afghanistan in August last year, after the U.S. forces left the country. Following the toppling of the Western-backed government in Kabul, the U.S. froze some $7 billion in Afghanistan's assets. Later, U.S. President Joe Biden signed an order authorizing the distribution of Afghan assets to 9/11 victims. Afghans and lawmakers denounced Biden's decision as an attempt to steal the Afghan people's money. 9/11 attacks in the U.S. resulted in years of destruction and bloodshed in Afghanistan. People here say they have been paying the price for attacks in which no Afghan was involved. Rahmatullah Baghban, Kabul.
We asked Abdullah Mirzada to tell us how the years of U.S. occupation affected Afghanistan. Here's his account.
To go into details to the effects of the occupation of Afghanistan, development of war insecurities, development of poverty and destruction of infrastructures and destruction of economy are some of the consequences of the United States invading Afghanistan. But to go even into more details about the casualties that Afghanistan had during that 20-year invasion, we could mention that 71,000 civilians only were killed, according to Institute of Watson Brown and Institute, and 78,000 soldiers, National Army soldiers, were also killed. These numbers are without the number of the opposition fighter, which can reach up to 84,000. And besides that, 5 million people lost their shelters, they lost their homes, and they were displaced. The United States, even after departing from Afghanistan, even after withdrawing from Afghanistan, still has those detrimental effects on Afghanistan. We could refer to the sanctions that they imposed on Central Bank of Afghanistan, and the blockage of almost $9 to $10 billion, which raised a crisis in economy. It also raised the rate of poverty, which is said to be facing 97%.
The leader of Palestinian resistance movement Hamas, Ismail Haniyeh, has arrived in Moscow to hold talks with the Russian foreign minister, Sergei Lavrov. Haniyeh leads a senior delegation that includes Deputy Chief Saleh al-Aruri and other members of Hamas's political bureau. The resistance group says that Moscow invited Hamas to discuss mutual ties and other issues, including the situation in Palestine. A Hamas delegation previously visited Russia in May amid increased tensions in the occupied Palestinian territories, particularly the Al-Aqsa Mosque. The meeting comes amid heightened tensions between Russia and Israel due to the regime's support for Ukraine and Israel's repeated attacks on Syria. Political analyst Barry Grossman explains the talks between Hamas and Russia boost the movement's credibility at the international level.
Having these talks lends a measure of credibility in international eyes to the organization and a measure of legitimacy. But as your introduction pointed out, Russia is now in a big fight with the Atlantic world in the Ukraine as a result of Russia doing what any of the key Atlantic world countries would themselves have done probably much earlier than Russia decided to do it. And in the middle of this battle, Israel has unashamedly taken the usual hypocritical position in support of the U.S. position and the Atlantic world position. Very often against the Russian position. And so it stands to reason that any reluctance there might otherwise be to have the high-level meetings with Hamas would go out of the window as a warning to occupation officials, as it sort of shot across the bow, if you like.
Iran is rejected as unconstructive a statement by three European countries censoring Tehran's stance in the JCPOA revival talks. Foreign Ministry spokesman says it's a regret that France, Britain, and Germany have issued such an uncalculated statement, as talks to revive the 2015 accord are still ongoing. Nasser Kanani warned the three European countries against walking in the footsteps of Israel, which is trying to derail the JCPOA revival talks. He says the European countries should accept responsibility for the consequences if they continue on this path. The European trio said in their statement they have serious doubts over Iran's sincerity in seeking a nuclear agreement. They warned that Tehran's position jeopardizes prospects of restoring the 2015 accord. And that is for this edition of World News. That's bye-bye for now.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
Could you tell a little about yourself?
I'm Eric Shumanandi from India.
I was born actually in London, England.
I'm a journalist by profession.
I'm 20 years old and I'm a student of physics. My dad, who taught me the art of radio.
Listeners special.
In the name of God, the compassionate, the merciful. Salam, dear listeners, and warmest greetings to you all. Welcome to this week's edition of Listeners Special on this Sunday, September 11th, 2022. I'm Atefe Erfani, hosting this program today. Listeners Special is the Sunday program where your views are presented through emails, letters, and messages. So please contact us and tell us what you think about IRIB English radio programs. And if you have any message for our great listeners around the world, you can record your voice, send it to us, and get your voice heard in this program. Please do remember, Listeners Special is your program. It's your views that are important. Please don't go away and keep us company until the end of the program. Welcome back. This is Listeners Special, and here I truly appreciate those of our listeners who have kindly sent us reception reports, including Anand Mohan from India, Ajit Kumar from India, and Lars Skolund from Sweden. Many thanks for that. And as usual, many of you have taken the trouble of sending us reception reports. As you may know, and as I have repeated many times in this program, these reception reports are very helpful to us, especially to our technicians and engineers at IRIB English Radio. You know why? Because these reception reports enable us to provide a better service to our listeners around the world. All of you who have sent in a reception report will be receiving an electronic QSL card from us. So, here, as usual, we've received many emails and letters from around the world, which I mentioned some of their names here, and later during the program, I will read them, including an email from Ivan A. Zeleny, one of our old and regular listeners from Russia. Bashir Ahmad from Bangladesh, one of our regular listeners, has sent us an email. And Adita Pratika from India has sent an email. And here we've received an email from Dario Gabrielli from Italy, one of our old and regular listeners. And the last but not the least is an email from Harold Seuss, one of our old listeners from Austria. Please stay with us. And here we go to see what Ivan A. Zeleny from Russia, one of our old and regular listeners, has said. Dear friends in IRIB English Radio, a few days ago, I was glad to hear a program on a Muslim topic in which a male announcer was quoting the Noble Quran. When the announcer spoke, a beautiful nasheed sounded in the background. If this report is correct, please send me your QSL card or EQSL or a verification letter. First of all, salam and warm greetings to you, Ivan Zeleny from Russia, and please accept our deepest and warmest appreciations to you for sending us this email. It's really great that our listeners let us know their views about IRIB English Radio programs, just like you, Ivan Zeleny from Russia, one of our old and regular listeners. Again, thank you for this email. We are looking forward to hearing from you very soon. Wish you all the best. My colleagues will soon send you an electronic QSL card as verification, Ivan. And as I said in the beginning of the program, Bashir Ahmad, one of our old and regular listeners from Bangladesh, has sent us an email. Let's see what he says. Hello, I'm Bashir Ahmad. I have previously sent you several emails talking about current issues, and I really like IRIB English Radio programs. Also, I have frequently heard my name in the listeners' special programs. Thank you for mentioning my name in your radio. First of all, salam and warm greetings to you, Bashir Ahmad, and many thanks for sending us this email. It's an honor to have special and unique listeners like you, Bashir Ahmad from Bangladesh, and wish you all the best, Bashir Ahmad from Bangladesh. Thank you for reflecting your views in this program. So my colleagues will soon send you an electronic QSL card as verification. Write to us soon and tell us your views about IRIB English Radio programs. And after a short break, I will be back with you. Welcome back. Adita Pratika from India has sent us an email, a short message. Let's see what he or she says. Hello, IRIB. I am Adita, writing from Tamil Nadu, India. I am a new DXer and I am 20 years old. I feel glad that I'm sending one of my first reception reports towards IRIB. Salam and warm greetings to you from Tehran, the Islamic Republic of Iran. Adita from India. So you are a DXer, but we welcome you as a new listener of IRIB English Radio, and it's an honor to have a new listener at IRIB English Radio. Adita, we wish you all the best, and we are looking forward to hearing from you soon. And please let us know your views about IRIB English radio programs. Thank you again. We wish you all the best, and my colleagues will soon send you an EQSL card as a confirmation. And from Italy, we've received an email from one of our old and regular listeners, from Dario Gabrielli. Let's see what Dario says. Dear friends, my name is Dario and I am 57 years old and I live in northeast of Italy in a village situated near Venice. With pleasure, a few days ago, I listened to your English program on the frequency of 11,645 kilohertz. I want to send you some details about the programs in MP3 file because the reception was not clear. If the reception report corresponds to your programming, I would like to receive your confirmation with QSL or EQSL with the complete data of the confirmed transmission and signature of the verifier. Thank you in advance. Salam, ciao, warm greetings to you from Tehran, the Islamic Republic of Iran, and of course, IRIB English Radio. Please accept our gratitude to you for this email, Dario Gabrielli, as you send many emails and letters from Italy to us. And we're so happy that the signals of our radio are received in your region as you live in northeast of Italy in a village situated near Venice. So please accept our EQSL card as verification. Dario Gabrielli from Italy, we wish you all the best. And of course, we're looking forward to hearing from you very soon. So after a short break, I will be back with you. Welcome back. Here we have an email from one of our old and regular listeners. Yes, Harald Seuss from Austria. Harald Seuss says, dear staff from the English department or IRIB English Radio, I was glad to hear again the signal here in Austria. This time I spent 2 weeks in a DX camp in southern part of Austria beside a lake. I lived in my tent. We all in the group were listening to radio stations. So I made a reception report and hope you can verify it by QSL card. I wish you all the best for further transmissions. Your listener, Harald Seuss. Salam and warm greetings to you, Harald Seuss. And thank you very much for letting us know your experience beside a lake and your experience of listening to IRIB English Radio with your companions. That's great. We wish you all the best. Write to us soon and tell us your views about IRIB English Radio programs. And please accept our electronic QSL card as a verification, Harald Seuss from Austria. So we had a very good time together, but before saying goodbye and before ending this edition of Listeners Special, I want to thank those of our great listeners who sent us reception reports and emails, including Anand Mohan, Atij Kumar, Lars Skoland, Harald Seuss, Ivan A. Zeleny, Bashir Ahmad, Adita Pratika, and Dario Gabrielli. Many thanks for being with us and goodbye.
Dear listeners, your opinion is always important to us. We invite you to spend just a few minutes writing us a letter or sending us an email. We'll be glad to hear from all of our listeners who have any questions or comments about any of our programs. Our postal address is IRIB English Service, PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran. You can also send your emails to englishradio@irib.ir. That is one word, englishradio@irib.ir. Please visit our website at www.pasttoday.com/en. Our phone number is 00981-2201-3720. Once again, our phone number is 00981-2201-3720. Our profile is also in Facebook. Our address is www.facebook.com/pasttodayenglish. Thank you all for being with RIB English Radio.
This is A to Z. An introduction into an Islamic lifestyle. Today's lesson, Salam and Greetings. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In today's lesson, we will talk about the topic of salam and greetings in the Islamic lifestyle. When we look at the Islamic teachings and the life of the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wa alihi wasallam, we see that whenever he used to meet someone, he used to say salamun alaykum, which means peace be upon you. And in return, there is an answer, which is wa alaykum as-salam, which also means that peace be upon you. So sending peace or praying for someone when we meet them, it is important to ask from Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala for the peace, for the mercy of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. And we want everyone to be in the same state in which we like to be. If we want to have a peaceful life, we want others to have the same life as well, so that we can have a peaceful society. And therefore in Islam we see that in the Quran, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala in chapter An'am, verse number 54, which is chapter 6, verse 54, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala says, وَإِذَا جَاءَكَ الَّذِينَ يُؤْمِنُونَ بِآيَاتِنَا فَقُلْ سَلَامٌ عَلَيْكُمْ. And whenever our verses comes upon a person who believes, whenever it comes to you, O the Prophet, say to them, Salamun alaykum, peace be upon you. And we see that the Prophet, whenever he used to see anyone, even a child, he used to say salam to them. And this is what we learn from the life of the Prophet, that when you are living an Islamic life, you must start greetings by saying salamun alaykum to the others. Welcome back. You're listening to A to Z from IRB English Radio. We were talking about the topic of salam and greetings. In the life of the Prophet, when we see that the Prophet was the one who has spread this, and who whenever he used to see anyone, even a child, used to say salam to them. We have many narrations about the importance of the salam. For example, Imam Sadiq alayhi salam is saying that مِنَ التَّوَاضُعِ إِن تُسَلِّمَ عَلَى مَنْ لَقِيتَ. It is from the signs of the modesty that whenever you see someone, you say salam to them. You pray for the peace for them. And in another hadith, which is from Imam Hussein, he said that the salam had 70 goodness in it, and the one who offers the salam, who starts the the wording Salamun Alaikum, who first starts saying Salamun Alaikum when they meet, there are 69 goodness for him. And then the one is for the one who answers the salam. And on the other hand, we know that the jawab or the answer of the salam is an obligation. That when someone says salam to us, it is necessary to return him the answer according to the salam which he has given. So this is the importance of the salam. Even in the Prophet ﷺ also has said that man bada' bi kalami qabla salami fala tujibu. If someone starts talking to you when he sees you, when he meets you, and he has not said salam to you, then do not answer his question, do not answer him until he says salam. So this is the importance of the salam. And in the Islam, it has it is very important that when two people see each other, they must say salamun alaykum to each other. Wassalamu alaykum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Thanks for listening to A to Z from IRB English Radio. For more information, visit our website at parstoday.com/en/call-of-islam page. Till another episode, God bless you all. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
From the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
The U.S. played an unacknowledged role in the 2017 bombing of an internally displaced persons camp in Nigeria that killed more than 160 civilians, many of them children. Please stay with us for an article in this regard, written by Nick Terse, journalist. This article is published under the heading U.S. played secret role in Nigeria attack that killed more than 160 civilians. Here's more. The United States played an unacknowledged role in the 2017 bombing of an internally displaced persons camp in Nigeria that killed more than 160 civilians, many of them children. A surveillance plane circled above the RAN IDP camp, which housed 43,000 people and was controlled by the Nigerian military, before a jet arrived and bombed the area where people draw water from a borehole, survivors of the attack said. The jet then circled and dropped another bomb on the tents of displaced civilians sheltering there. The Nigerian Air Force expressed regret for carrying out the airstrike, which also killed 9 aid workers and seriously wounded more than 120 people. But the attack was referred to as an instance of U.S.-Nigerian operations in a formerly secret U.S. military document obtained exclusively by The Intercept. Evidence suggests that the U.S. launched a near unprecedented internal investigation of the attack because it secretly provided intelligence or other support to the Nigerian armed forces, a contribution hinted at by Nigerian military officials at a time. The U.S. inquiry, the existence of which has not been previously reported, was ordered by the top American general overseeing troops in Africa and was specifically designed to avoid questions of wrongdoing or recommendations for disciplinary action, according to the document, conducted as part of a long-running counterinsurgency campaign against the terrorist group Boko Haram. The January 17, 2017 attack on the camp located in Ran, Nigeria, near the Cameroonian and Chadian borders, also destroyed at least 35 structures, including shelters for war victims who had been forced from their homes. The Nigerian Air Force bombed the internally displaced persons camp, which had been set up by the Nigerian military, because the location was not reflected in the operational map as a humanitarian base, according to Major General John Ehang, Nigeria's Director of Defense Information, adding, hence, it appeared as a place that could equally be used for enemy activities. Nigerian human rights activists questioned how the military could be unaware of the camp and alleged a cover-up. The tents were visible from the air, according to satellite imagery. Last year, Agnes Callamard, then United Nations Special Rapporteur on extrajudicial summary or arbitrary executions, noted the absurdity of the strike. The military presence in Ran, its role in establishing the camp, and their facilitation of the humanitarian distribution on the day raised many questions, she wrote in a 2021 report, adding, no independent investigation was carried out. Just days after the attack, U.S. Africa Command secretly commissioned Brigadier General Frank J. Stokes to undertake an investigation to determine the facts and circumstances of a kinetic airstrike conducted by the Nigerian military forces in the vicinity of Ran, Nigeria. Its findings were never made public. AFRICOM did not answer the intercept's questions about the results of Stokes' investigation or the extent of U.S. involvement in the attack. Civilian victims and the American and Nigerian publics deserve answers about any U.S. role in this devastating strike, said Annie Schill, senior advisor for the U.S. at the Center for Civilians in Conflict or CIVIC. What exactly was the U.S. involvement? What were the findings of the investigation, including findings of wrongdoing? And what kind of responsibility does the U.S. acknowledge for the grave harm caused? The formerly secret document directed Stokes, Deputy Director of AFRICOM's Directorate for Strategy Engagements and Programs, to be sensitive regarding the assessment of materials maintained within special access programs, often referred to CAPS, sometimes called black programs. This program is highly classified with a strictly enforced security measures and need-to-know access requirements. Certain programs are unacknowledged, their findings and funding hidden within the federal budget, and their existence formally denied. Spokesperson Kelly Callahan said AFRICOM was not involved in the bombing of Ran IDP camp, but secret and low-profile programs on the African continent can be carried out by the CIA or Special Operations Forces under their own chains of command. While AFRICOM takes responsibility for drone strikes, for example, they are generally carried out by a Joint Special Operations Command or JSOC task force. retired Brigadier General Donald Baldock, Chief of Special Operations Command Africa at the time of the Iran strike, told Intercept in 2018 that although JSOC was required to coordinate and de-conflict through his headquarters, that didn't always happen. I get a phone call and someone will say, "What are you doing in that area when we weren't aware of you were there?" And I'll say, "I wasn't in the area, so I don't know," Baldock said at the time, adding, "Later you come to find out it was a JSOC element doing something that undermines trust. It's not a good thing." U.S. surveillance and intelligence gathering operations have often been employed near Nigeria, including a Predator drone flown from neighboring Chad, in addition to a longer-range Global Hawk and a manned turboprop plane deployer over Nigeria beginning in 2014, ostensibly to search for children kidnapped by Boko Haram. In neighboring Niger, the U.S. flew drones from bases in Dirku and Niamey. In 2016, The Intercept reported on a secretive drone base in Garoua, Cameroon, near the Nigerian border, employing drones which could carry out 24-hour surveillance, allowing U.S. intelligence analysts to gather detailed information about Boko Haram's movements, bomb-making factories, and military camps. Also mentioned were British, French, and U.S. intelligence units based in Abuja, Nigeria, Maroua, Cameroon, and Njamena, Chad, serving as clear houses for intelligence about Boko Haram. That same year, the process by which the U.S. provided information like aerial surveillance photos to aid Nigeria's fight against Boko Haram was streamlined from as many as 2 weeks to 1 hour. The New York Times reported, specifically noting that drone photos were provided to the Nigerian army. In 2017, The Intercept also revealed the existence of a drone base and torture center used by U.S. contractors in Salak, Cameroon, in the northern border region between Nigeria and Chad. Callahan, the spokesperson, insisted that AFRICOM had no additional information on the Iran airstrike, but did not respond to a question of how this was possible, given that then AFRICOM commander General Thomas D. Waldhauser had ordered to top AFRICOM officer to conduct a formal investigation that included gathering accounts of the strike or information from witnesses, inspecting documents, and collecting information which will support any subsequent reviews of the strike and shape the manner in which any future coalition or partner nation operations are conducted. Earlier this year, The Intercept revealed how U.S. targeting assessments carried out for another allied military led to a 2015 airstrike on an ISIS bomb factory in Hawija, Iraq, that touched off secondary explosions, killing at least 85 civilians. In the wake of that Dutch airstrike, the chief of targets for U.S. Central Command insisted that the attack had been conducted by the book, including the pre-strike collateral damage estimate, or CDE. This was a perfectly accurate CDE call, he insisted, emphasizing that CDE methodology does not account for secondary explosions. No Americans were held accountable for the civilian deaths in the Hawija strike, in keeping with the litany of attacks from Somalia to Libya and from Syria to Yemen that the Pentagon has failed to investigate or reinvestigate, despite civilian casualty allegations. Earlier this year, Representative Sarah Jacobs of California asked whether the Defense Department was planning to revisit civilian harm allegations for cases in which new evidence has come to light. Exactly how many people were killed in the bombing remains unknown. Calamard, the UN Special Rapporteur, was provided a list with the names of 127 victims, two-thirds of them children. Witnesses involved in the burial say 167 victims were interred in Ran Cemetery, while a local government official put the number at 236 dead. Witnesses described finding large numbers of ball bearings following the bombing. Photos of the dead and wounded, according to Calamard's report, also showed both massive and smaller wounds consistent with firing of ball bearings-based ammunition. The allegations that such munitions were used are extremely serious, Calamard noted, and should have been independently investigated. Experts say the U.S. government needs to come clean about its involvement in the Iran airstrike and other similar instances around the world that the U.S. may be keeping secret.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1520 to 1620 UTC on the following frequencies. 25 meters, 11,865 kilohertz for the Indian subcontinent, and FM 91.5 MHz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or Bat 5, and via the Internet. Our Internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program P.O. Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
English Radio, a herald of unity and solidarity amongst Islamic denominations.
Oh Lord, here I am, pleading at your door. Send me your mercy, send me your peace, or I am lost for sure.
Hadith of the day.
Here I am, yearning for your cure. This humble servant will be diverted from
You're listening to the program Hadith of the Day with Dr. Shiraz Hossein Agha on IRIB English Radio.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Welcome to our program Hadith of the Day here at IRIB English Radio. Today on Hadith of the Day, we would like to recite for our respected audience a beautiful hadith and narration which has been narrated from Imam Al-Qadhim alayhi salam. This hadith is about the completion of a good act, fulfilling it, taking it to its end and completing it. Imam Qasim alayhi salam said, "A good favor done to a fellow believer is not considered complete until accompanied by three things." You know, if you want to do a good favor to your fellow believer, your brother in faith, or your sister in faith, this good favor is not complete until it has three properties, it has three characteristics, or it is accompanied by three things. The first is this. The first is the underestimation of the act, meaning the person who is doing this favor to somebody else, he should not consider it as very great. He should underestimate it. He should not believe its value. It is of any value, and then it is very good. Second is concealing it. He shouldn't go around bragging about it. He shouldn't go around telling other people about it. He should try to conceal it as much as possible. The third is hastening its completion, meaning he shouldn't leave it half done. He should try to take it to its end. He should try to complete it, right? Like I say that he wants to go and build a mosque, you know, in a poor neighborhood, right? He shouldn't go and build the foundation of the mosque and forget about it for another 5 years until he gets, you know, more money. He should try to go and secure the rest of the funds to build the money and complete it. He should go and try to secure the rest of the funds to complete the mosque and you know, go and finish it, get it over with. He who underestimates his good turn to his fellow believer has esteemed his brother highly indeed. Meaning if somebody believes that the act that he has done is not very virtuous, is not very great, in reality, he believes that the believer to whom he is doing this favor to deserves more than what he has done, right? So in fact, you are, you know, regarding your brother in faith as very great. This is a good virtue. This is very virtuous. This is very good. Whereas he who esteems his good turn to be great has deemed his brother to be insignificant. If one is considering the act that he has done, the favor that he has done to be very good, in reality, he has belittled his brother. He thinks that, you know, this person doesn't really deserve what I have done for him. So he's belittling his brother, which is something bad. He who conceals the good turn that he has done has honored his action. And he who hastened to fulfill his promise takes pleasure in the gift too. Right? It's not very pleasurable, you know, to perform half of a good deed or a portion of a good deed and not take it to its fulfillment. When we look at the final product or of the action that we're doing, the end product, the end result of it, that's when we actually take pleasure in the thing that we've done, right? So it's good to hasten and complete the thing that we're doing and take it to its end so that not only that we can take pleasure from it, but also that the actual effects that that act has can be seen and can result and accrue from the act that we're doing. Thank you for joining us here on Hadith of the Day. We were looking at the completion of a good act in the words of Imam Qadhim alayhi salam. Until next time, wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
That was Dr. Shiraz Hossein Agha for the program Hadith of the Day on RIB English Radio.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad. Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad. Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad. آل محمد.
Bring us now from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.